Right now, we have the power and we have the connection. We'll have, of course, David Terechuk in with the Media Beat. David is, of course, a guy who's got his own website upon also giving us his time on Fridays. It's themediabeat.us. David is also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. And he joins us on Friday Morning Live. Good morning, David.
Well, hello there. It's good to hear you stressing the value of live broadcasting on radio. I hope we're not in any danger because one of the big things that's happening in the media world this weekend is the launching of Apple TV Plus. And at first blush, I thought that it was leveling some kind of rival effort to beat The Breakfast Club. There's a show they're doing called The Morning Show. Oh, watch out.
it's
a drama. I think like a lot of media people, they think the way, the media executives, one of the ways they think they will get the attention of media critics is to make a television program about television. And that's what's happening. It's a drama. And it is very glossy, very, very expensive. It's the way that Apple TV wants to get into the game of streaming. And if they think they can take on Netflix and win, well, we'll just have to see. But I doubt it very much.
It's not only Netflix, it's Amazon. I mean, all these.
And of course Disney is coming.
And
up
Disney's got their own channel
next week.
Yeah, it's funny, television does change where it's still television, but now you really can get most of the stuff on television via internet. But the great thing about radio is there's no internet connection needed. If there's a storm or something, we're on the air. And if you have a portable radio, you can always use it to listen to with batteries. It doesn't drain quickly. It lasts for hours and hours. So that's enough self-patting on the back.
What I can do to take you away from the idyll of rural Connecticut, where your radio is such an important part of life. Here in the media capital of the world, New York City, you wouldn't believe this, but there are citizens dancing in the street this morning. There's so not media people, but ordinary citizens of New York City. The cause for their celebration is the fact that Donald J. Trump's declaration of domicile, as it's called in the world of the IRS, his declaration of domicile now declares that he's no longer a resident of New York City. He's definitely officially a citizen of Florida. So there's a lot of very happy New Yorkers this morning.
I saw that story and I'm saying there's some way it's going to be tied up in his legal wrangles.
Oh, you think?
but you can't.
Probably most of all to do with the tax authorities that he's registering with. But it comes at a time which just rams the message home for New Yorkers. Trump happens to be attending a series of bouts at the Madison Square Garden of the United Fighting Championship, mixed martial arts. And of course, whenever he comes to town, he snarls up the traffic mercilessly. And it also happens to be the weekend of the New York City Marathon. So once again, the poor suffering citizens of New York City will have to put up with the fact that the president lives in their town, but not for long.
Yes. He certainly isn't a resident of the White House, but anyways, that's just a joke, folks. I'm only kidding out there. Of course he is. We look at what stories to talk about once again, and you just can't get away from Brexit or impeachment because it even fills the air on BBC. I'm amazed on BBC. I watched their television, how much they do cover the impeachment
internationally speaking. Yeah. Those are the twin crises spanning the Atlantic. Yeah, it's and the BBC is renowned for its sort of level-headed and level field producing in many ways in its range of material from literally all over the world. They probably have the, I think I'm right in saying this, they probably have the greatest number of bureaus, international reporting bureaus around the world. And but of course they find that the financial implications of the European Union, this huge trading bloc on the international scene, changing dramatically, losing one of its members, one of its biggest members, financially speaking, and the president of the nation that is the biggest economy in the entire world, of course, are almost matching international crises, which deserves their special attention, and that's what it's getting.
You know, I want to slide away from that for a second, and I
I
don't know
don't blame you.
if you're aware of what's happening at NBC News. They basically killed a story that Ronan Farrow put together on Harvey Weinstein, and didn't allow it to air.
Yeah, Ronan Farrow's new book goes into that in great detail. It's and of course, as you can imagine, it's causing a lot of ructions within the news division of NBC.
And so it should. And I'm not a big fan of Rachel Maddow, but it's not. I just don't like the way she delivers her show. Oh, we lost David there for a second. Are you still there? No, he's not. He cut off, so we'll bring him back. We'll see if we can bring him back here. There you are. You're back.
I don't know where I went, but I suddenly disappeared, didn't I? But I'm back. Yeah, Rachel Maddow is amongst those who are most disturbed about Ronan Farrow's accusations about the pressure on him to can the story he was preparing on Harvey Weinstein.
Well, Chris Hayes, also, I'm not a huge follower of his, also spoke out against it, and this is the sad part about this, with the networks, with the president constantly hitting the networks with fake news, fake news, fake news, fake news, enemy of the people, enemy of the people, enemy of the people. The last thing a major network needs to do is say, you know what, new accusations against Matt Lauer, we're not gonna launch a new inquiry. I mean, for gosh sakes, who runs these companies? You know, just for PR's sake, you should do it. Never mind the fact that it's the right thing to do because you're a company that has had problems with Matt Lauer in the past. I mean, this is where sometimes you look at mass media in this country, the major media, and you just wonder they open themselves up to being just Donald Trump's barbs, and then they just show themselves to be totally wrong. I mean, this is a wrong thing that the NBC network is doing, and it makes the president look right.
Well, yeah, it's my enemy's enemy is my friend, yeah. And anything that happens to my enemy is a good thing. That's the principle that so much of the political world operates on now, Donald J. Trump has been a huge example of that. But it has to be regretted enormously that NBC can't just deal with this in a straightforward manner and wants to go the route of denial continue the suspicion is that they're basically just continuing the cover up. Which they're, long seen to have been conducting over Matt Lauer's conduct initially. It's as you say, it's just very bad PR to be handling it the way that they are handling it. But there's something about corporate divisions of media companies. They've been NBC has been owned by much bigger companies for almost all the time that I've been in the United States, about almost 30 years now.
Well, that's the biggest.
And of course, you know, corporate considerations are always much heavier handed than you would want them to be, and much heavier handed, I think, than the news division themselves would want to be. But I suspect that's what's going on. It's pressure from the boardroom floor. No commercial company is ever totally free of that.
You know, that, and that, you just point out another problem with Comcast being the owner of NBC now, and Comcast probably overnight, corporate-wise, has become basically the leading broadcaster on the internet with all its different cable companies that it owns. It not only owns the NBC, but it owns a delivery function which reaches more people than other. This is what makes people suspicious.
Absolutely, you get what I call vertical integration, where the production of the actual product is totally aligned with the distribution of it too, and so you got the operation of monopoly, almost a classic definition of monopoly capital.
You know, and here's what I guess what I like to point out is that newspapers, local newspapers, and local radio stations. And actually even local access TV stations, because they cover local meetings and everything. More and more pressure is being put on these local functions to provide timely news information to their communities, because on a much wider level, the statewide TV stations don't do it. There's not as many local newspapers around anymore to do it. Somehow we've got to get back into this country where the press is totally independent of one another. You know, that's what I loved about the old-time newspaper wars. And even back when there were just three networks, the network news wars, everybody had a full staff. Everybody had people all over the world. And you had a read on for, and now people just don't want to read. I mean, it's a weird situation we're in with the media. I mean, you want it to get back to where it was, and you just know that it's not heading in that direction.
Yeah, yet another pressure to add to the the prevailing forces that cut down competition. They turn competition into what used to be lively competition into a kind of mass groupthink, and you get pretty much the same wherever you turn. You know, when Jill is here, she always stresses that point too. And it is one of the saddest things about development of the media in this country and in much of the Western world. You have a situation in which lively competition is just not the name of the game anymore. It's sledgehammer cudgeling and amassing of pretty much the same views and the same material across the whole horizon.
You know, it's interesting, the two stories that we started off just mentioning, Brexit and impeachment. The interesting thing about these two stories, and it's amazing how England and the United States are following a similar path, the major pressure points on Brexit now and also on the impeachment are the upcoming elections, even though the United States election isn't up until 2020.
Well, it's coming. Yep.
The primaries are there. And, of course, with Brexit, now you have an election coming up. It's going to be in December, right?
Yeah, December 12th. Yep. You know, that's a cause for concern in many parts of the country. One of the great stretches of the United Kingdom that is pro-Europe and anti-Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister trying so hard to take Britain out of Europe with a deal or not with a deal, is Scotland in the far north. And on December 12th in Scotland, that's not temperate weather for going out to vote. So the Labour Party, whose turnout problems are a constant feature of their electoral prospects. It's a sort of given that the Labour Party, always representing working class by tradition, tends to suffer more from low turnout. It's just one of those unfortunate facts of political life. And it's going to be worse even for Scotland, which is, my old home country. And I know that if that whole stretch of the United Kingdom, which is the stretch which is most firmly in favor of staying in Europe, finds its vote depressed, then Boris Johnson might have a good chance of getting his way.
It'll be interesting to watch, just like this, I lived through the impeachment of Bill Clinton. I lived through the resignation.
Very near impeachment of Richard Nixon, too.
Yeah.
That he decided wisely to resign instead.
I'm just amazed that there's a majority of people in the House of Representatives who have no idea what impeachment is. And I'll include Democrats and Republicans in that, and also in the Senate. And I just urge them to go back and find videotapes of Senator Sam Ervin running the final Watergate impeachment hearings, and also look back at the final congressional and then Senate vote on Bill Clinton and see how that was run. They have no idea, because of social media, David, now everybody wants things done at breakneck speed all at once, and an impeachment inquiry leading into an impeachment hearing leading into a possible impeachment trial is not ever a speedy thing.
And you've got a bunch of people. Hello. You've got a bunch of people. You've got a bunch of people who... And it always makes me wonder where the grown-ups are, but I will tell you a gratifying story. You've got a bunch of people who just have such compressed time spans that it's always striking.
And their own attention span has
just been collapsed. But what I find absolutely stunning is it's such an obvious, to use a word that people use now, lane. And I can't believe that no one is going, hey, okay, you guys are running around chasing these fragments that you don't even know what you're talking about. So how about I'll go over here and say, right, so I'm the slow, I'm going to be the slow lane. You guys can be the, you can speed by. And I'm struck that no one's even bothering to do a little bit. You could do very cleverly, instead of just the same old, you could do an impeachment. You could do 2 minutes. You could do two really dense minutes with enough zibbly graphics that people would watch. You could just do that. I guess what I'm yenting about is the lack of creativity, it the willingness to just keep doing more o same when more o same and same isn't doing the trick. And except for
the whole situation leads to a lack of imagination. I think people are just stultified in the media too, stultified by the goings on. They and everything has to be poured into pretty much the same mold every day or every hour. The fast turning of the news cycle. On the other hand, the news cycle doesn't happen very much. It's very different as it turns. It's the same stuff around and around until the next news break.
Or until something happens.
And even that gets poured into the same formula.
And what I found really striking, really, is on the day that the Commons ultimately voted to have the election, after all of that, you can get way too detailed. But on the day that they actually voted, and it was a pretty, 420-20? It was a pretty,
Only two Democrats voted against it for reasons to do with their own.
Oh, no, you're talking about the impeachment. Yeah. I'm talking about the actual voting to have an election. And the reason I'm...
Oh, okay. Okay.
And the reason that I'm talking about voting to have an election is because at least this is only going to be a six-week version of what we have now been going through since the, as far as I can tell, September of 2015. And, right.
Well, British elections can be very short affairs in the end. I mean, officially, the campaign period in England is 3 weeks.
Oh, really?
And we've got longer notice this time than we normally get. So, yeah, it's very different, very different. But the palaver, as it were, and the kerfuffle creating it was all high drama in terms of media potential. And I think the BBC, because it's their bailiwick, did a great job in bringing us the whole flurry. And I guess, you know, we're going to settle into a big slugfest between now and December 12th.
Right. And we're very interested to see how it's covered versus how, you know, it's actually... I shouldn't say how it's covered. I just noticed a vaster and vaster gulf between what people are thinking and what they are being told. And this was the gratifying story I was going to tell you, because you know how we bang on about media literacy as often as we can, probably to the extreme yawnings of many people. But somebody stopped me the other day and they said, "So, I was listening to, as it happened, it was MSNBC on their satellite radio, and she said, a guest came on. And all the guy said was, 'I think, I believe, I. And she said, "You know, that's a fact."
Oh, they turned on their TV.
Oh, no, they actually turned on their satellite radio.
Channel to get.
Right,
they can't. All on satellite radio version. Okay,
but the bottom line was, whoever was on at the time, they actually heard the words, and most people don't hear the words anymore, except for the keywords that jump out because their brains are so scrambled. And this person heard whole sentences, and each sentence started with "I think" or "I believe" or "I," and that, you know, that I was just thrilled that she noticed. But it's also, just by the way, everyone, in a lot of cases, you are consuming without even being aware of it. It's like not knowing the amount of preservatives in your food. You are consuming opinion that is being presented as fact.
I don't think it's being presented as fact.
And this is happening for, and this is happening because of the very phenomenon that Marshall was talking about just now. It's the economic, it's all sorts of reasons, but a big one is the economic pressures on broadcast companies that has created the idea that opinion is what's needed, not news.
That's
because guess what?
That's
a lot cheaper.
You see, that's a lot different. I agree with that. I don't believe that the networks are trying to present this as fact. What they are trying to do is take social media, put it on live TV, and present it in the terms that people think they understand.
Right, it's infotainment, but it's an absolute abuse of medium.
It's
people should be fined and taken out back.
And that's what
I'm sorry.
What David and I were talking about earlier. It's the way news covers news now, because social media drives the networks, and it shouldn't be that way. It should be set up like this, and this is the way it always was, and it worked perfectly well. TV and radio broadcasts.
But there was the money to do it.
Yeah. TV.
Now they're owned by hedge funds.
But TV and radio broadcasts used to get their lead from newspaper columnists and newspaper stories.
And then we had cable.
And then. That would filter out to their broadcast stations, which the networks owned across the nation. So you had basically fully stocked newspapers supplying information to fully stocked networks, which then turned it out into their TV and to their radio audiences. And now everything, everything is not driven by the news media. It's driven by social media. That's the big problem.
Yeah, and it's absolutely criminal. And meanwhile, Facebook is launching, we've got 2 minutes, their news feed or whatever the H that is. What was striking also, I'm going back just to the Tuesday or Wednesday when it was decided that the UK was going to the polls, is interestingly, 5 papers covered that. That was their lead story. And The Guardian's lead story was that there would be an impeachment vote on the next day. And I thought, wow, at least that country's used to having different papers have different views. Here we've sort of...
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, but that is a huge transposition that is assumed and not actual. It's not that's not how, let's just say in quotes, that's not how we roll here. And yet that's how it's been being done. So that's something else to be aware of. And
you mentioned The Guardian, and my high school was divided into 4 different houses. We would compete amongst ourselves in sport and other things. But my house was actually called Scott House. The name came from the famous editor of The Guardian back in the 1920s and 30s. And his great saying, which I've used on this program before, but I want to end it today. He said, "Cost is free, but facts are expensive."
Well, we're going to take our expensive facts and pick it up again next week. Thank you very much, David Tereshchuk, the Media Beat.
Thank you.
Of course, you can hear David live on a Friday here on Robinhood Radio, rebroadcast on the weekend and during the week as well. And also always at robinhoodradio.com. Click on Demand, click on the Media Beat with David Tereshchuk.